The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Okay, ladies, would one of you like to kick us off?
Okay. We just like to welcome to everyone to the Lotus Place tonight, being hosted by Icy Hot, Delta Cougar, and we're going to talk about whatever is on your mind tonight. But most of all, let's say Happy Mother's Day to all the wonderful and beautiful mothers. Today, we know each and every one enjoy themselves today. We know the kids took their parents out and bought dinner today. And we just want to say a happy Mother's Day to each and every one that's on the sound of my voice from the Lotus Place, Black Talk Radio. We're looking to have a great time. Black Rose will be charming in a little later. And now, right now, we're going to hear from Icy Hot. Icy Hot, how was your Mother's Day today?
Mine was very fine, and I thank you for opening us up today. Every day is a great day for me, and I just had the best day ever. My boys were so kind to me, and I tell you, it was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful.
Well, you know what? That is so
wonderful. I felt so special.
Oh, I know you did. And do you not know there are so many other mothers who I know that their kids or their husband or their loved ones may not have said Happy Mother's Day to them today. So since it's Mother's Day, we want to take the time and give a shout out to all the mothers and really let them know that we love them. We know being a mother is not an easy job. It's a hard job. It's a 24-hour job, 7 days a week job, and it's you're constantly being a mother. You never stop. Even when they get grown, you're still a mother. Because I know I have 3 grown sons. I have 137, 136, and 131, and I know I'm still being a mother. So I can imagine, how you have a couple of young ones and plus one grown daughter and a grandbaby. So I know it's a lot. And plus, I have 13 grandbabies. So I know there's a mother is a hard job, a very hard job. It's something that you just don't learn overnight. It's something that comes with age and wisdom all the time. So
it's so true. And you know what I was thinking about when you were talking? Not only is it 24/7, 7 days a week, it's a lifetime job. And it is so rewarding. It is so rewarding, you know, to see these little ones. They go from, I mean, birth to adulthood. It is just amazing. And, of course, the ones that do what you ask them to do, they're so successful. And they get out and they do well in the world.
You know, you're absolutely correct. You know what, I think about that all the time. I hear people say the preacher's kids, and you know, my three boys are the product of being a pastor's child, and I know that was very hard on them, because when they was coming up, you know, they couldn't do like the other kids. They had to walk a fine line. And they tells me that since they've been grown, where, you know, we couldn't do this, we couldn't do that. I said, no, you couldn't. I said, your daddy was a pastor, and your daddy couldn't tell the other people to do certain things, and his kids are not doing it. I said, it just wasn't right. But do you not know now, my boys see a lot of things that they thought we was being hard on them about, and now they have their families, and they see. And I like to give this shout out right here to all the mothers. I remember one time my son moved away, and he was living in the great old state of Minnesota. He called me one night, and I never forget it, and I must tell this story since it's Mother's Day. And he called me, and he says, when I got the phone call so late, because this boy, he normally don't call me late, and he's not a caller. If it had been the oldest boy, it wouldn't have worried me, because the older boy, he's going to call no matter what. But this particular son calls one night after 12 o'clock, so I knew it had to be something. And he said, Mama, he said, I just want to thank you for how you raised us. And this just the way out of the blue, he said, I want to thank you for how you raised us. He said, Mama, because I'm up here in the city, and he said, and I'm looking at the little kids, Mama. He said, they 10, 12, and 11. He said, Mama, it's 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock at night, and they walk in the streets. The parents don't even know where they at. And he said, Mama, I thank you and Daddy for the way that y'all raised us. You know, I thought y'all was hard and strict on us, but I see it was for our good. He said, and I just want to thank you. So a lot of times kids think parents are being, mothers and fathers are being hard on them. It's not that we've been so hard. We've been down that road, and we see what y'all don't see, and we're trying to stop you from going down that road. And so that's what Mother Day is today, to let kids know that parents love them, a real parent love them, and they're going to try to do everything within their power to stir them in the right way. And so that's what mostly great mothers are trying to line their kids up and keep their kids to go a straight, narrow pathway. I know, like you, Iserhot, I know you're very, very proud of your daughter. Your daughter is very, very successful. And I know you, as being a former superintendent, and you know the background that you come from, and your daughter followed in your footsteps and education, and she's very successful in it. And I know as a mother, that makes you very, very proud of your daughter. You know?
Oh, it does. It does. It does. And, you know, one of the things is that even you talk about how your daughter, your sons were, couldn't do certain things. Now, I used to tell my daughter that all the time. I said, you know, I'm here, I'm a teacher, or when I was a principal, or even when I was the associate superintendent, I said, you know what, you can't do certain things because of what I do. You have to really walk a thin line, I said, because you could really, really embarrass me with this kind of high-profile role that I play in the community. And I used to tell her that all the time. And you know what? I would be willing to bet that's how most parents feel about their children, whatever they're doing. If your children are, you know, respectful and doing what they should do and kind of just, you know, growing up, being reasonable, that's what you want. No matter where you are, whether you are a preacher's kid, whether you are a teacher's kid, no matter what kind of family you come from, parents want to be proud of their children. They don't want their children actively engaging in all kinds of embarrassing situations for them, no matter what you do. I mean, you just want children, your children to be, you know, what they should be and the best that they can be. And so I think that really...
You absolutely correct, Aisha. And I must say, I must get on off into some of our topics, you know, and I know you have some great topics for us too tonight, but I'd like to talk about this topic. Let me get my paper. There was a young man in Memphis. His last name is Moore. He's 15 years old. And he did the ACT test. And the young man at 15 years old took the test and scored a young black man. I must say, let me put that in there, a young black man from Memphis did the ACT test at 15 years old and did a perfect score. Now, don't you know his mother and father is very, very proud of him? And we must give honor and shout out to Mr. and Mrs. Moore tonight in Memphis, who have a 15-year-old son and a black male scored a perfect score. He made a perfect score. And I know his parents is very, very proud of him. And see, and this is what we want for our young boys and young girls. And we want them to be successful. And we know there are times parents are doing the best they can, the best that they know how. And the only thing they want is when they leave this world, they want their children. And they see the come to be successful. And a lot of us, we live a good life before our kids, I must say. And sometimes they take their own path and they have to, some learn the hard way. And the ones that learn the hard way, I must say, no disrespect, because I have three sons and mine is one of the three that learned the hard way. When they don't listen, they go and do what they want to do. But I must say this, the Bible says train them up in the way they should go. He said they won't depart. He didn't say they won't stray now. But what he meant about that word that you put in them and that upbringing you put in them, once they get older and they begin to see themselves, because after a while we all did things I know I did when I was young, and I thought I was doing something big. But now, when I began to get older and got married and had kids, the things that I thought that I was enjoying, I wasn't enjoying. My kids meant the world to me. My family meant the world to me. So this is what mothers is about and fathers is about. It's about leaving a legacy, and leaving a legacy that you can be proud of. And I want kids to know, we want our kids to graduate, we want them to get a good job, but even if they don't take a path of going to college, they go out and just get another job where you don't have to go to college, just get a labor job or whatever kind of job they may get. We still proud of them. No matter what, we still proud of them. Long as they being honest and decent and staying out of trouble. You are very proud of your kids. So that's what I must say to all the mothers tonight, and more so I'm giving this shout out in Memphis, and let's say shout out to Mr. and Mrs. Moore, where their 15-year-old son did a perfect score, a perfect ACT score. That's very, very good. A young black boy, 15 years old. Now, Miss Hattie.
Yes.
I said, hi. What do you think about this young man getting this perfect score? What is your take?
I think we should all be. We should all be proud.
Educator.
Go on. I'm sorry.
No, I was trying to say, as you being an educator, because I don't know too much about the education field, but I know that's your degree in. You was a principal. You was a superintendent. And you've been in all those positions, and I just want to get your take as a principal and a superintendent on this young man, 15 years old, making his score. Now, let's hear your take on it.
Oh, well, you know, my take is this, that in the role in the world of education, we should all be proud of this young man. And I'll be very honest with you. There are not a lot of young people. It'll be interesting to follow up on this, me to follow up on this, to see just like what percentage of even graduating seniors get a perfect score on the ACT test. I'm sure he is in a very elite group of young people, and to be very honest with you, with him being 15, at 15 years old, and to have that, this country actually should be proud of this individual. This African American male has scored at 15 years old. The ACT test is not a test that's to be taken lightly. You know, it's a college entrance test, and so I think it's just. Marvelous.
You absolutely correct. We all should be celebrating him, and I know they are celebrating him all over Facebook. And then let's talk about, since it's Mother's Day, let's kind of stay more with this. Let me give you another one where the young lady, she broke the what do you call this, Twitter account? I'm not really sure what you call it. The young folks say when they tweet your picture so many times, and they tweeted this young girl picture. She was like 17 or 16, I think, a young black girl, and she was heavy, and the young lady went to the prom, and she felt really good about herself. And people have to realize all of us are not going to have the same body structure. And this is why in America we so caught up in weight. So the young lady went to the prom, and she was heavy. And she was so excited, and she said she never went anywhere. She stayed in the house because she always had low self-esteem. But when she put her dress on, got her hair done, got her nails done, and went to the prom, and she was so happy about going to the prom, she came back and she took a selfie picture of her in her prom and said how happy she was and how nice she looked and how gorgeous she looked, and she posted it. And the next morning, I got the word the young folks used. They said that her picture went viral. And they said that her picture went viral for all the wrong reasons. And the young girl said when she opened up and seen it, she said it crushed her, it devastated her, that she did not want to leave her home again. Why do, in America, we have to get so caught up with young kids have to be a certain size, have to look a certain way? If you don't have blue eyes and blonde hair and wearing a size 5, a size 4, a size 6, you're not pretty. why is it that way in America that we had to take this young girl, a lot of the country did, took this young lady and beat her down, beat her self-esteem down. Well, she didn't have no self-esteem, that she thought she looked good in her prom dress. And the people were so cruel to the young lady because she didn't look a certain way. Why is this goes on in America that we got to have blonde hair and blue eyes? Just like Lil' Kim. Lil' Kim have fell into this. And she said all the men quit her because she said she wasn't pretty. And see, we done passed this down. And this is why this goes on. And this is what happened to this young girl. Her skin was brown, a dark brown. It wasn't pretty enough. And in our community, we need to stop this. We need to let people know, hey, you're not my size. You don't have to be my size. You don't have to look a certain way. You don't have to be white skin. Like Lil' Kim, bleached her skin almost white.
At Duke Energy,
her hair blonde.
It's our job.
And they think that's pretty. Now, how can we build this young girl's self-esteem back up? I said, hot. Tell me, how can we do this as an educator?
Well, you know, I tell you, one of the things that's important is for everybody to train their daughters to have, you know, a good self-image and not to really be that concerned about what other people are thinking of you. There are so many more things that you can have in your repertoire of goodness so that you can just be who you are and love you for who you are yourself. And that would be crushing to someone in that age group, probably, no matter if they were, had their self-esteem really built up. But it's a flawed system of beauty, and we all know that, because some of the to tell you and to look at it from a realistic standpoint, there's so much plastic surgery going on now that tells you where people are, that they're willing to literally mutilate their bodies in order to hold up to this, quote, standard of what's called beauty, which has been put up on people throughout the media, throughout Hollywood. I mean, you saw the young women that were around, African-American people putting in the blue contact lens. I mean, the whole theme where all of the money is being spent, you know, on buying hair, and all of these are you have to set up a system. These marketers have to set up a system where they can make money. It's all about money. It's all about money. That's it. You market it. You make this beauty kind of standard, and then people start working toward that. And then they start thinking, well, if it's not this way, then I'm not beautiful. And so, I mean, therein lies the whole dilemma. So it's about the capitalist money and them making more of it, and it's about the standard that people buy into.
You're absolutely correct. And I think in churches, and in the reason I always go back to churches, because in the black community now, let's be for real, we know a lot of people goes to the church, and they spend the majority of their time at the church, at football games, different things. But I know black people, the majority of them be at the church on Sunday mornings through Wednesday night services. And I must say, we need to start having classes that teach young girls about the self-esteem. And don't you think, Ms. Eisenhart, we need to start teaching classes? And that's what I think we should do. We should start teaching classes about young people's self-esteem. and that will go a long way. If young folks can, if young folks can feel good, and we started at an early age feeling good about their self-esteem, that will go a long way. And I think that would play a good part, a great part. And so, and that's what I think we need to do. We need to start teaching young folks, okay, you don't have to look like somebody that have blonde hair and blue eyes. You don't have to be a size 6. Main thing, build a self-esteem up. Look in the mirror. Tell yourself you're beautiful. Tell yourself you somebody. Tell yourself you're worthy. And that's all you have to do. You have to constantly tell yourself. Don't let the white man put it in your head every time you turn the TV on. It's blue hair. Green, and they got blue hair now, green hair, red hair. All this is, like Icy Hot say, it's stuff to make you go out and spend money to keep the white man very, very wealthy. And that's all it is, young girl. You have to be persistent about your body and about your looks. Let no one define you how you're supposed to look. If you want to be natural, be natural. If you want to be straight, be straight. But don't let no one define you and put you in a box where you cannot be who you want to be. And that's all we're saying, young ladies. Be yourself. Don't let nobody design you to be what you want. They want you to be. You be what you want to be. No matter what. And I must say this, as coming up, I came from a family where there was no money or anything growing up. We barely scraped and we barely got by. But one thing I can say, I have never. Oh, are we time for a radio break?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, go ahead, go ahead. Let's do our radio break.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to the Lotus Place, being hosted tonight by Delta Cougar and Icy Hot. So please call in to the Blog Talk Radio show, and that number is 715-3. I have my number in a few minutes. I thought I knew it right off the top of my head. Excuse me.
I got it for you. Can you hear me?
Will you give it out, Scotty?
Yes, it is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 if you would like to come in on air.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and you probably want to give that one more time because it was a little bit inaudible. It's 641 715-366-0, and you can hit the code number is 549-032. You know, I want to change the shift of gear just a little bit on the mother thing.
Go ahead.
And let's talk about, I was viewing a little bit ago and earlier, it talked about the world's 20 most powerful moms. And so I want to just go through those real quickly if I can and just let people think about that. And then let's have a little feedback on that if people can. And certainly if you want to call in and talk about the whole theme around self-esteem and beauty, that's perfectly well, too. You can definitely talk about either one of them. So the first number one they had up on the list, and this is out of Forbes, and Forbes is saying the 20 most powerful mothers in the world. Number one was, guess who? Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State, United States, age 64, residence, Washington, D.C., her marital status, her status is she's married, and she has one child. And the number two person that was listed as for the 20 was Dilma Rousseff, and she's the president of Brazil. Age 64, residence Brasilia, Brazil, and her marital status is divorced, and she has one child. The next one that was listed is a wonderful lady, and I'm going to grab her name here, Indora Noye. She's chief executive of PepsiCo. Her age is 56. Residence is Greenwich, Connecticut. She is married and has two children. And I think I did maybe skip one here. Let me just go back just a moment. My computer is not doing its very, very best here. But I'm going to get to the next one here in just a second. The next one that is listed, and then I'm not going to try to go back and get them anymore. I should have just done this one a little bit differently. The next person that I want to say that they have listed here, another woman who her name is Sheryl Sandberg. And she is the central operating officer for Facebook. Age 42. She's a resident of Atherton, California. She is married and she has two children. The next one listed, which is number five, is Melinda Gates, co-founder and co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And her age is 47, and she's a resident of Medina, Washington. Marital status, of course, married to Bill Gates, and three children. The next one here is Sonia Gandhi, and she is the president of the Indian National Congress Party. The Indian National Congress Party in India, in New Delhi, India, is her residence. She's 65 years old. Marital status, widow, and she has two children. And the next one that's listed here as the 20 most powerful moms by Forbes magazine is our own number seven, Michelle Obama, First Lady of the United States, and her age is 48, and she's a resident of Washington, D.C., and she is married with two children. The next mom listed on Forbes, most 20 most powerful moms, is Christine Lagarde, and she's managing director of the International Monetary Fund. She's 56 years old, and she's a resident of Washington, D.C. Marital status is single, and she has two children. The next one that we have here is, we're halfway through, number 10, Irene Rosenfeld. She's the CEO of Kraft Foods, aged 59, residence of Chicago, Illinois, and her marital status is married and with two children. The next one that we have here is Jill Abramson. And Jill Abramson is executive editor of the New York Times, and her age is 58. Residence, New York City, New York. She's married, and she has two children. And the next one we have here is Kathleen Sebelius. And she was the Secretary of the Health and Human Services, United States, age 63, residence, Topeka, Kansas. Marital status is she's married, and she has two children. The next one that we have here, the 20 most powerful moms, is Susan Wojcicki, I think it's pronounced, and she is with SVP Advertising, Google, age 43, and her residence is Palo Alto, California, and she is married, and she has four children. The next mom listed as Forbes, number 13, is Cristina Fernandez, president of Argentina, age 59, and her residence is Buenos Aires, Argentina. A marital status is a widow and two children. And we get to number 14. We have here none other than the wonderful, talented Beyonce Knowles. And her age is 30, and she's a resident of New York, New York. Marital status is, of course, married and one child. The next one coming up, number 15, and we're almost done, is Georgia Reinhart. She's a mining tycoon and a billionaire, age 58, and she is a resident of Perth, Australia. Marital status is she's a widow with four children. And then we get to number 17 here, Cher Wang. She's co-founder and chair of HTC VIA Technologies, I should say VIA Technologies, age 53, a resident of Taipei, Taiwan. And her marital status is she is a married mom with two children. And at 17, and we have three more to go, is Forbes' most powerful mom is number 17, Margaret Hamburg. She's commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration in the United States. And her age is 56, and she's a resident of Washington, D.C. She is married with two children. And number 18 coming up is Mary Shapiro, chair of the Securities and Exchange Commission, the United States. Her age is 56. She lives in Washington, D.C. Her marital status is married, and she has two children. And we have next here is, hold on just a second, Ann Sweeney, and she's co-chair of the Disney Media Networks, president, Disney ABC Television Group, and she is 54 years old, and she is a resident of Burbank, California. Her marital status is she's a married mom with two children. And finally, we have here Aung San Suu Kyi. She's the General Secretary of the National League for Democracy in Burma. She is 66 years old, and she resides in Yangon, Burma. And her marital status is she is a widow, and she has two children. And so I thought that would be kind of interesting, and just to think about that and to say, okay, Forbes has come up with 20 most powerful moms. So what do you think of that?
I think that's a good thing. And not only that, it's a good thing, even though we had 20 names, it may seem like it's a long list, but it's not. It's to let the young girls and young ladies know that coming up, that you can be successful, even though you with a husband or without a husband, and with a family and without a family, you can be successful. But most of all, the most important thing I take of this list, that you could be a mother and a wife and still be successful. Because think about it, men are husbands, father, and they successful. So we can let young ladies know, and like I said, young girls that's coming up, that you can have a husband and a family and be successful. So I think that list, what Forbes did, was a great thing, a very great thing, to let young ladies know that, hey, you can have both worlds. And I don't see nothing wrong with it. A lot of people may get offended. You know, when we was coming up, they would say, oh, you shouldn't do that. Women should stay at home. But this day and time, women do not have to stay home anymore, only by your choice if you choose to stay home. But most men today, most average man today, want a woman that's working. They do not want a woman if she don't have a job. Now, some men don't mind, but most of all, most of the young ladies today want to be educated. Most of them wants to be educated. There was a time when we was coming up, my age, at different ones, and they would always say, you know, have your family and stay at home. It's nothing wrong with that if you choose to do that. It's nothing wrong with that. And it's nothing wrong with choosing to be successful, to have a career. And most of the young girls today want a career, and I don't see nothing wrong with it. Years ago, they would tell you, you know, you stay home, have your kids. I mean, it's okay if you got it all in perspective. I don't see nothing wrong with it. And I say, hi, you is a perfect example of it. Tell the young ladies how you juggle being a wife and a mother and being a superintendent. Work your way up from a principal to a superintendent. Tell young ladies what it took and the sacrifices and the things that you had to do as a mother to get to that where you wanted to get, because you wanted to move up and you didn't just choose to say, okay, I have a husband, I have a baby, I can't do this, I can't do that. You didn't do that. So let's tell the young ladies, Icy Hot, how you done it.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you, there are sacrifices, and sometimes you have to sacrifice a lot in order to achieve what it is you want to achieve, unfortunately. And so I'm just thinking, one of the things that I often wonder about is when I was a teacher, when I first started out, my first year of teaching and second and third year, and then deciding to go back to school to work on a degree, a higher level of degree, it really impacted my marriage, and I actually was not able to hold it together. You have to have a husband that is really what I would say supportive of you doing some of those kinds of things. And I think the men now in this day and age, because that was in the 70s, this day and age are more equipped to handle that type of woman, because they're able to say, well, if we want to do this and if we want to accomplish that and if we want to live in this neighborhood and that neighborhood and drive this kind of automobile, it's going to take both of us, you know, achieving to the highest level that we can. And I think in the sense of the, now in this day and age, it's certainly different than back in the late 70s when I was, you know, just beginning to teach school and then moving on from there. And so you sometimes you have to sacrifice your marriage. And I, in a sense, think that maybe that's what I did do. And then maybe I didn't. Maybe it was going to be a not such a good one anyway. And I can remember talking to a colleague of mine, and I remember her stating that. She was my supervisor at a point, and she was saying how the ladies that went on to get their doctorate degrees, they sacrificed a lot, even further, to get to that level. And I thought, well, yes. And so sometimes you have to slow down and you rethink your goals and your marriage and all of that. Otherwise, you may lose your marriage along the way. And so you have to really think about it. And so that was the thing that, so it's not all peaches and cream when you think about, okay, let's be the mother, let's be the wife. You know, can you do all those things? And I can remember this commercial back during that time, and it was, and I can bring home the bacon, and then I can do this, and I can do that. And it was always this little jingle that people would, you know, tease women about, like, she can do it all. But when you do it all, you have to have that supportive spouse. You know, your husband has to be probably taking on some of the roles that traditionally men wouldn't take on. And I love it today when I see more of the men taking on those roles and being more engaged with the little children, you know, even changing diapers. My husband never changed a diaper in his whole life, never. But you see men doing that now, and it's not a big thing to see them doing it.
Because mostly you got a lot of men now. You have a lot of men now stays home and support their wife. And I don't see anything wrong with it. And you take me. I would love to go back to school, but you know my dilemma. You know, I have told you my husband don't want me to, and in order to keep peace in the home.
Right.
Right. And go back to school. I want to go back and get me a GED. I want to go back to learn how to properly, you know, carry myself. And when I say carry myself in my speech and different things, I would love to, you know, further my education. And I know in order for me to speak proper and talk, not change trying to be white like the people say, not that way, but just learning how to put my sentences and words and different things in the proper way. And I would love to go back to school, but I'm just being honest. So I'm telling young girls, you know, like Icy said, you have to get someone who supports you. And if you don't have one to support you to do that, and it's not that my husband just chose for me not to go, so I don't, in order to say, you know, keep my marriage right, Icy said, I just don't push it. So sometimes you have to sacrifice.
And I must say too, let me say
to the young ladies too, that my husband takes care of me. So I have, that's a different part right there now, young ladies. My husband do work and take care of me. So that, you know, that has a lot to do with it too. And so, but I would love to go back. So that's another show.
Yeah.
And then also, And also, I heard Oprah Winfrey said something, and I heard Katherine Hepburn, she was talking one time, and her and Oprah Winfrey said the reason they never had any kids is because they know they were career-oriented, and that's what they wanted most out of life. They wanted their career. And it's nothing wrong with it, but Oprah said she knew if that she had any kids that she couldn't take her career to where she took it to today, because she would have been worried about her family. And you couldn't blame her, so that's what she said. She sacrificed being a mom in order to mm-hmm. be as successful as she are. She sacrificed. So that plays a lot.
Absolutely.
That plays a lot. And there's nothing wrong with young ladies if you want something out of life. It's nothing wrong with it. And we need to teach our daughters, because I hear a lot of men today and a lot of fathers say they want their young ladies to be able to take care of themselves, because we know marriage, like when our parents and different ones was coming up, they stayed together, but now these people ain't taking no junk off of nobody. The young ladies don't take no junk anymore. And they got to be able to take care of themselves. And it's nothing wrong with having a career. But like Icy Hot said, you have to have a partner to be there with you to help you climb the ladder. And if you got one to help you climb the ladder and you want to be successful, y'all can go somewhere.
And, you know, half the time, I'm going to be honest with you, my particular situation, some people sit and they plan that. I did want to go back and get a higher education and go on to receive my doctorate degree. But I was really, my whole theme was, you know, being a teacher. I just wanted to be a teacher. And throughout all the moves that I was blessed with, all the promotions that I got, I was able to teach people. You know, with maybe from teaching the children science, was teaching, you know, staff development with all the principals in the district, or staff development with my whole entire staff and that sort of thing. And so I was into the teaching mode, and I was never really wanting, I've never been a climber. It just happened. It happened to me. They would come and ask me, well, would you do this? Here's what we need somebody to do. And I think they, you know, just knew, you know, and I had the credential to do it, but I was willing to stay as a classroom teacher always. I never wanted to be principal or associate superintendent and that kind of thing. Some people are climbers. I was not one of them. It just happened. I just got blessed with people asking me, and I said, okay, I will try it. And I tried it, and I was pretty good at most of it. I was pretty good at it.
That is, you know, that's
it. Just dropped it in my lap.
There's nothing wrong with it. Well, let's give out our number, and I got it right here. Call in to the Blog Talk Radio Show. Our number is 641-715-3660, and our code is 549032#. Let me get that code again. It's 549032#. And that Blog Talk number again is 641-715-3660. Please call in. And let's hear what's on your mind. Anything you want to talk about, just call in and let's talk about it tonight. And let's change gears right quick, if you don't mind, and we can go back. You know, I was going through today, and this is one of my hot topics, and one of my hot topics is that the shooting that was down in South Carolina. Now we got all these lawsuits are beginning to go forth now from the different families, because it was all these
up in the millions and millions of dollars raised. And it was like, I mean, it came from all over the world. And now the church is keeping most of the money and not hardly giving the family any of this money. Now everybody, different families, are going out and hiring lawyers saying that they didn't get their share. What do you think about that, Scotty? What do you think about that, Icy Hot?
Wow, well, that's very interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, I would have to say who did they?
They said that they said the money was intended for family members, but the church want to keep so much of the money for scholarships, and they want to keep money for the upbuilding of the church. But the family members said it was over like $18 million raised, and they only gave the family like $1.5 million out. That's all they give the family members. So the family members are going and questioning them, what is the church doing keeping all the rest of the money?
Well, that's really unfortunate that they're fighting over this money, because that emergency fund that came from President Obama, when that first happened, they kind of settled for that, is what I understood it to consist of.
Well,
and so now they're saying they want more money because people gave more money.
Yes.
So that's going to be unfortunate.
That's
going to be unfortunate for them, because we know who's going to end up with that money. Lawyers. Not the church. Neither the family members. And so that's real sad that they couldn't work through that one. Because $18 million is not that much money, those number of people that they had, to be honest with you.
I know, and now everybody, they is out. Let's go to a radio break from the Lotus Place Blog Talk Radio Show. Let's take our station break at this time.
You are tuned in to the Lotus Place Radio Show on Black Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Lotus Place. And we were saying about, we got a bad echo coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, now that's better. Now we were talking about the church and the money. So now they begin to sue. Everybody to begin to get a lawyer. And I must say now, and I love church, don't get me wrong, I love church, but I think the churches are getting so greedy now. And I hate to say it like that. The churches are getting so greedy.
I think everybody is getting greedy. They're all greedy.
And, yeah, but if it was meant for the family members, give it to them. Why shouldn't they have it?
Well, they shot up the church. And so the church does have to be remodeled and what have you. Now, the interesting thing is this. I'm going to still go back on this one. If you're talking $18 million and you're saying they're only giving them $1 million, it must have been more than that, because I think how many people were shot? It wasn't 18. How many?
It was nine people shot.
Yeah, it was nine, and so...
Well, you know how it is. You know when money gets involved, everybody goes crazy.
Yep.
If you ever want to see the worst come out in people, it is money. Money will bring out the worst in everybody. And this is what will happen. Money brought out the worst in them.
Yes. Sounds like
and
it.
So, and, you know, it's sad for it to come this way. You know, it's really sad that they couldn't get together and figure this out. And now it will have to be, you know, it will have to, you know, come out on the news and everybody know what's going on. Now the church is getting a bad rep, you know, they fighting over the money. So that, you know, that's just something to think about.
It is.
You know, that it comes to this. It really comes to this. And then I have another subject I would like to talk about, another uplifting story. There was
something happened to your voice. Maybe your phone accidentally jumped.
Oh, I'm sorry. My phone accidentally hit mute. Let me back up. Let me go back. You remember the young mother that was in Ferguson, and she started beating her son, and it went viral, and she was all over TV talking about she was mom of the year for beating her son and slapping her son for not going down, taking part in the ride and throwing the bricks at the police officers and stuff like this, you know? So let me bring this to everybody's attention tonight. Now that mother is crying. She's very upset. She said Steve Harvey, different one, different celebrities. Oprah Winfrey gave her $15,000. Different Steve Harvey books, one of them, that was going to help get her son in this mentor school and get her son, get them out of the area they were in. She said she mostly wanted for her son. And Steve Harvey, the young lady, said that she's still where she is. Steve Harvey, everybody who went on TV saying they were going to help her, none of it had panned out. None of them helped her, the majority of them. She said, but the saddest one of all is Steve Harvey led her to believe that he was going to help her son get in a school, and he didn't do it. And now her son is gone to Job Corps. And now the young lady, she said she's very distraught over them. She felt like they took advantage of her and used her for their purpose. And none of them kept their promise to help. She don't have a job or anything. So, what do you think about that, Miss Eisenhower?
Oh, well, one thing is always for sure. Wherever she was in life before all of that happened and that video went viral, I think a bird in the hand is better than two or three in the bush, and so she should have kept on with her life, knowing that if in fact something did happen, it would happen and would be, you know, better for her. However, still keeping on with her life that she had, because I think she did have a job at that time.
Now she's saying she don't have no job. Now she's saying,
you know, she's saying that she thought.
And why doesn't she have a job would be my question. Is it because she let go of her job thinking these individuals were going to do something more for her? Or
she said in her news, in her article, that they led her to believe that they were going to do this for her and that for her. They led her to believe that she was going to be a star. They were going to do a sick a reality TV. And none of it panned through.
Okay, well, yes, that can happen. And so I would imagine that those individuals that were in child protection was not going to let anything like that come down the pike, because they got to keep on going down that road that they've gone on in order to do what they need to do to destroy these black families. And that being said, but the cruel reality and analogy is this, is that it is okay for policemen to shoot down little black boys across this nation. And that's an okay thing. No problem, according to every one of the prosecutors that in recent times. And so a pop on the head is a real kind of thing. And so I wondered, did she get into trouble with child protection doing that? I don't know.
No, she didn't get you all. You know she didn't get in no trouble.
I don't know. You never. You know what? I heard this great phrase today. And sometimes people can say things and not say things. And when it really comes around to it, this individual said, a lie will travel around the world 7.5 times while truth is just putting its boots on. So we don't know what the truth is oftentimes and what the realities are in situations. So,
well,
I don't know.
You know she, what? You never know. And like I said, you know, she just, you know, and I just had to bring that up because I think they used her at the time as a symbol for their own benefit to get ratings and talk about it and this and that. And then she said when she really needed them, the main thing she was saying is she wanted to get her son up out of there. She wanted to get her son away from that environment.
Mhm.
And so, and her son wind up going to Job Corps. Then once the young lady came public and began to expose Steve Harvey and them in different ones, Steve Harvey and them began to say she didn't do nothing that they told her to do. And the young lady says a lie.
And that could be true, but you don't follow through. We don't know. You never know.
I'm just saying what she, you know, her article said. She said that it was a lie. She did everything they asked her, but Steve Harvey said she didn't. So when she got ready to go to the newspaper, that's one of the stories Steve Harvey released. But now her son is in Job Corps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know what? And I just said, don't forget where you come from, because you always have to go back to your people. That's the only thing I say about it. That's, you know, that's just my theory. You know, I think that they'll take you and use you for their benefit, and that's it. But okay, let's go on to the next topic. You know what? Another great topic is, let's talk a little bit. Can we talk a little bit about politics for a second? They said the other day that Donald Trump says that he's getting ready to spill all the beans on Hillary Clinton and her husband, and said Hill and Hillary had an open relationship, and he's gonna bring out that she had just as many men as Bill.
I mean, Bill had a bunch of women, but she had just as many men, and they had an open relationship. I want to know what that got to do with politics. Your job is a different thing. That ain't got nothing to do with that, because to me, Donald Trump had 3 or 4 wives, so what's the difference? So what are they trying to do? Well, you really ain't got nothing to vote for, really. And then I seen that where Hillary Clinton, they playing her statement. If she keep up, if they keep playing that statement, of a lot of people like me, because when I seen that statement, you gonna get mad talking about super predator. What do you mean super predator? Why my kids gotta be super predator? But when yours go do something, they didn't mean to do it. Why? And can I? Oh,
because they have because they have affluenza.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you absolutely correct. And then I'm jumping from one thing to another. Excuse me, radio audience. Our regular host is not here, Black Rose, but she will be back in on Wednesday. So just bear with me and Icy Hot doing this show tonight, because we're enjoying it. And I must say, I just thought about another subject I wanted to talk about, since we're talking about kids and mothers. There's a young man out of Louisiana. He's 17 years old. The little white girl, he's a black boy. The little white girl is 16 years old. The little white girl, now listen, this young black boy is a grade A student, a honor student. He excels in all sports, they said. They say he excels in all sports. He called himself liking a little white girl. And see, this is what we try to tell our boys, to stay away from that forbidden fruit. They are not going to let you do it, because they released a tape the other day of Hope Hogan. I'm going to go back to my subject. They released a tape the other day of Hope Hogan. And he said the only way that his daughter could date a black man, he had to be a black man with a lot of money. Other than that, his daughter could not date no black man. So listen at what he's saying. The only way he said nigger. I just got to call it like he said it. Hope Hogan said the only way that his daughter could date a nigger, that nigger had to have a lot of money. Other than that, his daughter couldn't date no nigger. So this is what they do. They send their daughters out and sons out to fool some of these silly nigger kids, Negro kids, excuse my French, to go and get the money, and so they can take it back in their community. And your community is left with nothing. It's left with not anything. So that's what I want to talk about. Now let's go back to it. I just had to bring that out because these two stories is going to tie in together. Now this young black boy excelled in all sports, they said. And he was very, very outgoing in the school, honor roll, everything he was perfect in. No problems with the law, no nothing. The little white girl and boy call themselves liking each other. She's 16, he's 17. She sent him, and down in Louisiana, sent her a naked picture, a naked video. She sent the little black boy that's 17 years old a naked video. She sent it. The boy didn't send her one right then. She sent one first. She sent him a naked video. The parents saw the video. that the young lady sent to the blackboard. They had this child arrested down in Louisiana, put him in jail, expelled him from school, and arrested him. So what can we teach our young boys about sending pictures of their bodies and know how the white man feels? He knew this. I think as black people and black parents, we should set our kids down. A lot of people don't like when I talk like this. A lot of people get offended. But we should set our young girls and young boys down and tell them this is a no-no. Stay away from this. Now, if you want to talk about this subject, you tell me what you think about it. And that number is 614-715-3660. The code is 549-032-POUND. You call in and tell us what you think. I think that we should teach our kids to stay with their own race. What do you think about this, Icy Howe? Now this young man is ruined. His mother is poor. She says she has sent out $4,000. She do not have the funds to fight to keep her son from going to prison and being registered as a sex offender. And the young boy and girl, she sent the picture first. He turns around and sends one back. Now he is being labeled and been arrested as a child molester, whatever you call it. What do you think on that, Icy Howe?
Well, I don't think the children are going to stick into their own race, to be honest with you, no matter what you tell them, because the world is just not like that anymore. I say this. I say you teach your children, especially the young African-American male children, to always be gentlemen. Be a gentleman and behave like a statesman. Behave like a young person who is going to one day be someplace and who's going to do extraordinary things. And once you get to that place of doing extraordinary things, would you like for somebody to pull this rabbit out of the hat and destroy you from getting to where you're trying to get? And I think that's the conversation that we have to have with these children more than anything. Because not only can a little, when you're talking about male children, not only can a little white girl destroy them and their interaction with a little white girl, so can any little girl. You can look at Mike Tyson and the situation he was in with that young lady. And that was a black man and a black woman. So you have to have that conversation to say at all times, remain a gentleman. Particularly when you have children that are doing well in school, because those are the ones that girls go after. The boys that are doing well in school, and yes, the little white girls go after them with a different vim and vigor. And so I think that's the conversation for me that has to be dealt with, not just the race part, but the other part, period. Because they can get into it with some girls who were very much more what do you call it, experienced than they are with sexuality, and they could be the same culture they are and can destroy them.
Well, the lawyer that the mother hired, the lawyer said it is a double standard, said because this have happened many times before, and when it's white on white, they does nothing, the lawyer says.
and he have plenty of cases to back it up. When it's young, when it's white, when it's black and white, it is a different story. The lawyer says,
"Oh, sure it is, absolutely." It start. I mean, that's this country's built around that whole race piece. A different standard for different people. Absolutely, that's not nothing unusual. Now, that's the other conversation you have to have with your children.
And see, my thing is, for me as my children, I'm just being honest. I told mine that you can never bring one home to the dinner table, and that's just me now. That's me personally.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that a racist or anything. I just think as a black mother, I worry about my son being lynched and worried about
right.
my son okay. getting hurt.
Mhm. Yeah, that's quite a reality.
Yeah, because you know that's what I look at.
Mhm.
That your children can be hurt from dating a different race. So that's what I look at, and you know, and I just, you know, the young man have ruined himself. He have ruined himself. But you know, Black Rose said, I must pass her thought along. She said that the parents should have talked him to stay away from them. And that's my theory too. My theory mm-hmm. is we have to set our kids down.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to teach them those are the enemy. They are the enemy. They don't mean you no good. So now he see they don't mean him no good. They don't mean him any good. Now his career and everything, he's got to be ready to ask a sex offender for sending him a picture where she's gapping her coochie open, butt naked, sending it to him, getting him all worked up. Then he turns around and sends her one back. Now, not she sending one. They asked her, what about her sending one? Well, our law says by her being 16, she is considered a minor. But she sent the picture.
Well, if that's the statute, that's the statute. And that's the other conversation with your children, with your male children you have to have. You better understand one thing, children. You better understand that statutory law that says what age you become an adult and what age you are a child still, a juvenile. And so I find it ironic that it's 17, because most states have it as 18. The people have to be 18 years old to be considered like consensual kind of consensual, and I mean that's sexting, they call it. I guess it's not sex, but it's like porn. But I mean, even if you I had a foster daughter once, and my biological daughter said, "Mom, she's got somebody's genitalia on her phone." You know, she had her. I said, "Oh, really? That's what that is?" And you know, she showed it to me and looked at it. And I said, "Oh, okay." And the conversation I had with this young girl is, I said, "Look, I think she must have been, I want to say, 14 or 15." I said, "You know, one day you might get to be a CEO of a company. I hope you're not sending things of your parts of your body, private parts, to these young men. Don't do that." I mean, I was just telling her that. You know, you can ruin yourself by doing that. And the young girl that sent this little girl that was 16, and your situation where the boy was 17, someone should have had a conversation with him a long time ago about statutory issues and ask him for some ID, because we know those children are going to be doing these kinds of things. Many of them are going to be doing that no matter what you tell them. But, you know, all you can do is educate them, and if it comes up, then that's what they're looking at, is a big problem around that.
Well, you're absolutely correct, Aisha. You know, you're absolutely correct. We do need to set them down. And this is the problem, like Black Rose said, that the parents are not setting them down. And that's where the problem comes in at.
Well, you know, I don't think your average parent even probably knows that children are doing those kinds of things at that level. A lot of them in the dark, they may get them a phone, and that's it, and they're thinking they're texting or calling or doing this or doing that, and
a lot of them get the phone.
I have to keep taking my. Go on.
And a lot of them get the phone now. I should have, because a lot of the parents are working. I know my grandson has a phone, and he's 16, and my granddaughter has a phone. She's 15 because the mother and the father's working, and the kids, they hadn't got their license and things yet, and they working on them. And now they have to have communication, say, hey, look, they're doing all type of sports, and they need these phones. Hey, I'm going to this place to practice. Hey,
oh, sure. And it's
safe. I'm at this place, or I'm at this school. And you know what? And I sent that information to all my little nephews and the little girls. I sent that information with a young man. I sent it to my grandson to let him know, hey, you can ruin yourself.
Right. Well, you know, that's true. And you really need to tell. I had to teach my little first grader this year about the Emmett Till story. I mean, it's a problem right there. You know, when the children are mixing and matching, and then the adults take it and they send them into a different level that the children really don't even understand or know.
What Gallagher? All right, now let's go to a
station break.
A station break. Black Talk Radio. Hello, this place.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Welcome back to the Lotus Place. And let's call in to, let me give the number one more time, to the Black Talk Radio Show. The number is 641-715-3660. The code is 549-032 pound. Call in. Let's hear what's on your mind tonight. And also, we got a letter that someone sent in to Delta Cougar, and she wants to ask a question. The letter states that this young lady have been in her marriage for over 15 years, and she wants to tell her husband that she's not happy, and she wants to know how can she confront him. She wants things to work out, but she just wants him to know that she's not happy anymore. Things is not the same anymore. So how, she wants to know, Delta Cougar, how can I approach him? That is her question. That, let's say it again, this is her letter. She is not happy. She's been in her marriage for 15 years. She wants to know how can she approach her husband to
to let her husband know that she's not happy and see if they can work on it, do anything about it. Now, my question is, when did things start to go sour? Why have they went sour? That is the question. What is going on? And see, this is what happened. This is Delta Cougar talking back to our letter. She says she is one of our secret admirers. I would say the first thing is why it went sour. Didn't you know it was going sour? Did you know it was not going right? And I think the number one thing is when we get married, we get so comfortable. We get so comfortable, we don't try to do anything anymore to excite that person. We don't try. We have the kids, and we get caught up with the kids. We get busy, but we still have to take the time to show affection to each other. And that's where the problem come in. We begin to have the kids. We begin, each one of us begin to work, and we don't have the time to put in with each other anymore. And when you don't put in no time with each other, and you don't have no date night to go out, you may not can go out to spending a lot of money when you're raising a family. You can just get out and walk on the beach. You can just hold hands. There's some things you can do, but when you don't do anything, life gets bored, and your spouse begin to look around, and you begin to look around, and that's where the trouble come in. And I say to the young lady, is start trying to figure out some things that you can do to try to liven things up in the bedroom. Start getting you some nice lingerie, some sexy lingerie, something out of the ordinary that you never done before, something that can really excite your husband. And see if y'all can get away and spend a little time, because the most important thing of all is you gotta put in time with each other. And you got to get out. Get someone to keep the kids. Get out once a week. Try to sit down and talk to each other. Just try to talk to each other. Tell him how you feel. Let him know how you feel. He may have some problems too, and he may want to express himself, but he don't know how to express himself. So this is what we need to do as couples. We need to sit down and express ourselves. We need to get out. We need to do things together. We need to go and kind of liven the bedroom up. Get in the bathtub with your husband. Get in the shower with your husband. Get naked. Do something unusual. And just go for it. And I think that would kind of, if that's what you want to do, and if you want to hold on to your marriage, I think you should do that. What do you think, Aisha?
Well, I think you've given some very good advice. I can't think of too much to add to that. The key issues are those that you stated. First of all, you're wondering, like, okay, well, why is she not happy?
Unhappy, that is correct.
That's the critical piece. And then, I can only repeat what you said, and then talking about, you know, you do something that's going to invigorate the marriage. You have to do that and be prepared to do that if you're getting bored at certain points, or if somebody is too snappy all the time, or if, and too indulged in their work, or, you know, why aren't you happy? Where is the? It's usually in one of those areas. It's either the sex part, or the money, or communication. Those are the three areas that people generally will be unhappy with, and are that, what do you call, infidelity piece. So, is somebody cheating? So you just really don't know. But that's just very very good advice, I think, that you gave. But if there's something wrong, one of the things with marriages is that you can always remember they are not going to be just perfect. They're going to be difficult. They work. You have to work hard at them in order to keep them solid and sound and unified. And that's what we ought to teach our young people that are going into marriage, as they go into that phase, and rather than having them think you get married and live happily ever after, which is what we were taught. So in essence, you get married and you really work very hard to stay married. I mean, that's the reality of keeping in touch with the marriage. So that's just my thoughts on that letter. And so you've given some very good advice. Did your phone get on mute accidentally again, Delta Cougar?
Yes, I'm sorry, it sure did. And I was just talking, I was just saying.
I know you're going to talk, so I said, oh, that phone must have gotten on mute again. I think you better put that phone on a speaker and talk a little bit.
But do you not know what I was saying? You're absolutely correct, Eisenhower. I agree with what you were saying, because they do have to work at it, but most of all is the number one thing I can say, you've got to spend quality time. And the number one thing is communication.
Mm-hmm.
When you lose communication, oh my God,
mm-hmm.
that carries a lot of weight. People may not believe that, but when you don't have communication with each other and you cannot speak to each other and communicate, I think the marriage is really head downhill. In order to save that marriage, you got to start to communicate, because you got to let the other person know how you feel. You've got
mm-hmm.
to. And if you don't let them know how you feel, after a while you're going to get so resentful of that person. You've got to let them know. And that's the key, young lady. I want you to hear me. You got to have communication. You got to let them know how you feel. And once, if you could sit down and y'all can talk it out, and like Icy Hot said, money, when you have money problems in the home, that carries a lot of weight. And a lot of time a husband can be stressed out on his job and don't know how to communicate to the wife, to tell the wife that he's having a hard time on his job. Then he brings the stress home from his job home, and then that makes it hard for y'all to communicate. So that carries a long ways. You got to open up. You got to sit down and talk. If you can sit down and talk it out, you can make it, because communication is the key. And then if y'all can come to an understanding, once y'all come to that understanding, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to work this away. You work this away. We're going to do this. We're going to stick to this. No matter what, we're going to stick to it. And this is what we have to do. So all I can say is communication. Communication. And things will work out. for your marriage, because we do not want families to be separated. We want families to stay together. And if you communicate, you will stay with your husband and you will stay with your kids. Because people may not believe this, and since we're talking about mothers tonight, mothers and families go hand in hand. And if you, when families are divided, it carries a lot of weight on young girls when they don't have their father in the home. A lot of young girls be devastated behind it when they don't have a father in the home, and they never get over it. And a lot of young girls don't have father figures to show them how a man supposed to treat a woman. Because the first place they learn how a man to treat a woman is in the home. They learn that in the home is when they see the mother and father interacting with one another. And if the father is being mean and hateful and not being treating the wife right, the young lady will learn that. So mothers and fathers, let's set an example in the home. So as young ladies growing up, they will know this. First place we start in the home is showing our daughters and showing our young men how to be. Nice. Can we
absolutely
talk about, can we talk about one more thing?
Sure, so true.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about this one. There is another case I just thought about concerning a young girl that she was in Texas school. She was in Texas, and what happened was the young lady bought, her grandmother gave her a $2 bill, and she gave her a $2 bill. And what she did, she went to the she went to school and took the $2 and bought her some French fries. The school cafeteria lady called the police, had the black girl arrested, and said that she gave them a fake $2 bill. And the young girl, she was 15 years old, in Texas, she said the $2 bill was not fake. She said her mother gave her this $2 bill, her grandmother. And now they saying in Texas there is a pattern going around where they are saying that they are targeting black kids, and the white kids are doing the same thing. Where they sending the white kids home, and the black kids are getting felonies behind it and being carted off to jail. Now I want to know, where are all these kids, like the lawyer says, where they got one black boy, he picked up a $10 bill off of the school ground. Now they want to know, his daddy want to know, where are these young people coming up with all this counterfeit money? And I'm saying the same thing. Where are these kids getting this counterfeit money from? And why are you, the daddy think that it is a conspiracy, but the black father was on TV on News 1 the other morning, and he said that the white man would not have his son and give his son a criminal record. He refused to let it be. So what do you think going on in Texas, where all these black kids are being arrested in a large group of kids, I say high, and being arrested, and the white kids are being sent home, and the black kids are being carted off?
Isn't that the same thing we've always been talking about? There's two worlds, one black, one white, divided and unequal. There's a whole book about it, and that's the way this country has been operating since its inception.
Yeah, and so
there's never been any equality. There's never been any equality, so to speak. And it's certainly always going to be the overkill for certain people in society, and we know who those people are. I mean, it's really clear if you don't get it.
But the father thinks so much money have been coming into these young folks' hands. The father thinks that it is a conspiracy that's going on. Because he is saying, where are these kids getting the money? The kids saying if they go to the store and different things, people are, they get the money back in change. So mm-hmm. the father said, why are they not going to these stores where these kids are getting this money from? Why are these kids getting so many counterfeit money? Why?
Well, what, it could be circulating, yeah. Well, it could be circulating, yes. It's there circulating, but at the same time...
What can we do for them? What can we do? Because I would like to see if we can come up with a solution. What can we do?
Well, one thing, maybe to start teaching them what real money looks like and what counterfeit money looks like. That's the only thing you can do is educate your children on all of these kinds of things. Then another, you know, way might be to just have them start using other kinds of money. I don't know. Could be.
I don't know either, but I just had to bring that up because that's been a real hot subject right now, because they say at this one particular school, the black kids are being arrested in a good proportion. They've never seen anything like this before. They are really targeting this one particular school and one particular area. So they were saying something is going on. Oh, I know what it is. It's the Marissa Alexander talking about the new Jim Crow. That's all it is.
Right.
Trying to put your children in the system to get them a record where your kid won't be able to vote. When they get your kid where they won't be able to vote, or do anything, won't be able to function right in life because they got all these felonies and different things on them. That's exactly what they're trying to do.
Well, that's what
I think it is. Don't you think so, Isaac?
Well, that's always been the plan. It's always been planned to be that way. That's why the judicial system needs an overhaul, remember?
I think they're not going to even let you get an overhaul. They so crooked because they're running it. They're not going to let you overhaul. You got to work really hard at it. How can we get an overhaul when the crooks are up in there themselves? And I'm not saying don't fight for it, but I'm just saying you got so many politicians are setting up there just as crooked and got all this planned. I never forget what David Duke said one time. He said, we doctors, we lawyers, we policemen. And I believe they are policemen. Oh, I believe it. Oh, there was a case. Let me go back because we ain't got but 10 minutes. Let me talk about the case in Chicago where there was a pastor. Let me get my little folder. I can tell you her name. There was a pastor that was arrested, and this is how it all started, the arrest started in Chicago, and they have an alleyway, and you have to go down this alleyway. And the pastor name, she's a lady pastor, her name is Miss Brown, out of Chicago. She had her two kids in the car back in 2013, and the reason I'm talking about the case, because the case just made its way to court. She was found not guilty. Let's go there first before we run out of time. But anyway, she was found not guilty. There is an alley back way to go to her house, and she was proceeding to her house going down the alley, and she says she always pump her horn before she go down the alley because she said the alley is so, the people drive through so fast, and she was afraid that a car may come out and she don't see it and it's driving really fast, so she pumped her horn. So she said a police was in a police car, and she turned in first, and the white lady police officer got mad because the lady turned in first. Now, the lady, remember this, Miss Brown is going home. This happened in Chicago. Miss Brown is going home. She is a minister, been at the church for years. Very good reputation, and she was going home, and the police officer felt like they cut her off. They got out and they had some words. The lady was trying to explain to them. They snatched the lady out of the car, started beating the lady, and arrested this minister because the white woman got so angry. She felt like the white woman should have bagged up and let her pass first. This is what the white policeman felt like. They charged her with 7 charges. They charged her with the severe charges was attempted murder, another attempting to run over a police officer, and assaulting a police officer. Refused to obey commands. I mean, just a whole bunch of them. And the lady told them from day one they was lying on her. So finally, since 2013, the lady just finally got the tape released. And when the jury saw the tape, immediately the jury let the lady go. But make a long story short, the same district attorney in Chicago saw this tape and still prosecute this woman. But when the jury saw the tape, they acquitted Miss Brown and let Miss Brown go free. Miss Brown said she used to say that the young men in the neighborhood, she told them that if y'all pull y'all pants up and act right, the police won't bother you. That's what Miss Brown said she used to tell the young men. Miss Brown said the young men used to tell her, Miss Brown, we are not doing anything. They are harassing us. So Miss Brown says now she believed the young men. She would have never believed it would happen if it hadn't happened to her. She said because they falsified and lied and all these records. And this is what the young men in the community have been telling her for years. So now Miss Brown says she have already been an activist. Now she is going to be a very, very outspoken activist. Now she says she was one of those kind. She had a little prejudice with her own kind, with the young men. Now she's saying, now she see the police just for what they are. What do you think about that, Aisha Hyde? We got about 4 minutes. What do you think?
Well, I can relate to Miss Brown because I stood at one of our meetings that we had here before Jamar Clark was murdered over there by that police officer, and I said the same thing. I told them, I used to wonder, why are these African-American boys running from the police? Why don't they just talk to them and see what's, you know, what do they want? Why do they run from them? After my ordeal with them, you know, when I began helping you, and you and I were accosted, harassed in St. Paul when we were going to the meeting for the Isaiah Project, and then, you know, a whole lot of other things came after that, and they started harassing me, and I said, okay, I see why these young boys run from them now. I understand why they run from them now. Because they know what they're going to do to them. They're going to beat them or kill them. But I never even imagined that. I was one of those people. I would give, when they'd have fundraisers to the highway patrol and the police, you know, they call and, you know, you know, they have their fundraisers and stuff. Well, I was one that used to participate in. I know that they don't have those anymore, but I guess they don't have to have them anymore because of the way the structures have changed from those days 15, 20 years ago. So I understand that. And Mrs. Brown, the pastor, the preacher, she was targeted. She was targeted because she probably was an activist. And that's what I wanted to say. When you are an activist and when you're not going along with the status quo, when you're trying to you know, speak up, fight for equality and justice for everybody, you do become a target. And so that being said, she was targeted. That police officer that did that to her, they weren't so angry. They targeted her to do that, to beat her. And
yes,
that was
and she
frightened.
Was
hold up. Hold up. Let me finish. Let me finish. Let me finish. I just need to finish one thing. And the reason they target you like that is because they want to scare you so you will stop being an advocate and an activist. That's why they do that.
And that's what I was trying to say. She was one of the biggest activists in her community. She said when she got out, an activist for the police, and she got out in the neighborhood and really started working, and she couldn't understand why they targeted her.
Well,
and
she better know that's right.
I couldn't understand because she began to get a lot of pull, and the young folks was beginning to come to her, just like it was in the day of Malcolm X, when Malcolm X began to get all this pull in the community. This is what they did to Malcolm X.
And others. So I think it's about the music, and we're signing off for tonight now.
Okay, I can do that. Well, thank everyone for tuning in tonight to the Lotus Place. We enjoyed you. We enjoyed hosting tonight. Me and Isa Hot and Delta Cougar, Black Rose, will be back this coming Wednesday. Have a nice day. Thank you. Nice night.